This episode is rated NC-17. Listener discretion is advised. If you hear it's because I've just censored a swear word. If you hear... it's because there was a story I did not want to hear again while editing. Sorry. Sorry, listeners. I'll be the first to admit I'm a bit of a press. And this is admittedly a hard story for me. Also, there is something I want to say before we begin this episode. It's hard not to judge people who make different life choices than the ones you've made, like being vegan or driving a Hummer. I definitely struggle with it. To me, polyamory is an alien concept. I sought out this interview with Isla because I wanted to understand more about it, specifically the impact it, along with prostitution and pornography, have on women. While polyamory is not the life I would choose for myself ever, under any circumstances, I don't even like the hot bar at Whole Foods, that doesn't make it a bad life. Polyamory can be unfair and rife with abuse towards women, but so can monogamy. Also, I and you probably, even if you don't think you probably have been so privileged in how we've been raised. In case you weren't familiar with the background of my guest, she was raised in an abusive conservative Christian environment where she was homeschooled. She did not get the opportunity to go to college to better her life through education. That just wasn't available to her. She did not get the opportunity ever to live in the world that we have lived in. According to her, from what I read online, to be independent, her choices were between soul-crushing factory work and sex work. There's more stuff you can get into if you really want to, like just Google it, but that's beside the point. As I publish this episode, I am donating $100 to Breaking Free, a St. Paul-based nonprofit dedicated to empowering survivors of sex trafficking and exploitation while advocating for systemic change. Their core beliefs are that 1, no one deserves to be bought and sold. 2, everyone deserves to live free of violence. 3, it is important to criminalize the buyer and decriminalize the bot, to hold the demand accountable, not the victim. People ask me all the time how they can support my podcast. Well, if you enjoy this episode, you can show your support to me by donating to Breaking Free. It will be linked in the show notes. Now, let's begin our story. Have you ever seen the movie All About Eve with Betty Davis? There's a scene where she goes, "Fasten your seatbelts, it's gonna be a bumpy ride." Yeah, that's how I feel right now, okay? Fasten your seatbelts. I censored a lot of stuff, but it's gonna be a bumpy ride.
Only five, the power went out and my entire computer just fell down.
So some kind of bad news. Something happened and it like wiped the recording. But luckily we were only 6 minutes into our interview. So let's just pick off where we left off. So we were talking about effective communication and polyamorous relationships. Just as a bit of background, in case I can't get the recording, Ella was telling me about her current partner in a polyamorous relationship. He has multiple other partners. She broke up with her last partner and is only seeing him. While she experiences some jealousy around him seeing other women, she feels like it creates a more intimate connection with him and also helps ground their relationship. She feels like it helps her stay on top of her game. She then began talking to Lass. Yeah, you're
it's
right.
True.
Yeah, it does help you stay on top of your game. You cannot go to the gym, because if you don't go to the gym, there are thousands of other women that go to the gym. And if the only thing I know about him now is that he organized your birthday party and he's really good at sex. Actually, that's nice. Don't slack off. He can't become like Barfish, the kids call him. Just find someone else.
No, exactly.
Yeah, all right. Okay, I hope I have the recording so that's not the synopsis of it.
Great synopsis. Okay.
Thanks. So we were talking about effective communication. You were saying you need a lot of effective communication in polyamorous relationships. What does that mean? Do you have a Slack calendar? Do you have a group chat? How do you communicate?
I guess I am kind of in a group chat with some of his ladies, actually. I don't know. We gossip about stuff. He has this one girlfriend who I'm good friends with. I really like her a lot. And so we want to move in together. And so we're joking that like we have want to be sister wives and then he could just like come around to date us and then leave. But yeah, no, I'm friends with some of his girlfriends. Pretty great to varying degrees. But mostly he has the logistical challenges because he has so many ladies. I don't really. Mostly because I'm only dating him and then only having casual sex with other people. So it's not a big deal. Occasionally, I have had multiple partners, like more partners in the past, and that has been a little bit worse. But normally, when people talk about like the Slack calendar scheduling thing, my guess is this is relatively a rarity in poly. I think most poly people don't have that many partners. It's like usually a little bit less exciting for most of us. There's been like long periods of times where I only date one guy. Even I still consider myself poly because like occasionally I'll fool around with somebody else. But yeah, the communication really has to be on game. And I failed a lot at communication early in my poly career, you could say. But I'm doing mostly a lot better now. A lot of it's just learning to be honest about the way that you feel as opposed to suppressing what you feel in order to try and be like a cool poly partner. Because then resentment just builds up, but then it leaks out in ways that are really damaging to the relationship.
What is the most number of people you've ever dated? And what would be the highest number you feel like you could successfully date?
I think 4 is the most I've dated at one time. And that didn't last very long. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it depends what you mean by date. Like some people you see not that often. I really liked having 2 partners. I think 2 partners is sort of my sweet spot.
It's okay if you want to answer this. If you have an open relationship and you're seeing people outside of it and seeing them casually, how do you protect yourself? Like your sexual health? What do you do? Do you get tested? Do you get like lots of tests? What's the story with that?
Yeah, well, in poly communities, people who are like the slut cloud, I call it. The people who like to have a lot of sex with each other. It's kind of like a broader community with norms. Like you go to parties and have and like a lot of people meet at the fucking party. So it's like everybody kind of knows. There's definitely culture around this. There's like a lot of cultural norms. Everybody knows you talk about testing before you have sex. And most people are getting tested all the time. So it's actually pretty safe. It's very rare. I'm actually not sure. I know some people who've gotten STDs, but it's not quite in like the slut cloud culture. It's like different contexts. One guy being a sex worker, right, who is a very low-end sex worker, which I would not consider part of the traditional slut cloud behavior. And like, that's how he got an STD, for example. Anyway, no, but there's definitely condoms. You talk about it. There's like the concept of fluid bonding. So you could be like in a fluid bonding group polycule. It's kind of like COVID. You know, for COVID, people would have bubbles where it's like you all can interact with each other freely. But if one of you wants to interact with somebody on the outside, like everybody has a say in it or everybody agrees on the protocol for that. And so there's definitely a fluid bonding thing where some people agree, okay, we have sex, we share all our fluids, we're all tested and we agree. And then if you want to bring an additional risk, like you have to consult the group for that. So I have that a bit with my partner. My partner and I have picked the level of risk we're willing to have. And then if anything is particularly more risky than that, we consult each other and like, how do you feel about this? And then if somebody wants to do something more risky, we'll just like wait and they get tested beforehand. But testing is super common. Everybody gets tested all the time, typically multiple times a year.
That makes sense. Yeah, I figured, you know, you're pretty sharp and seem very sex positive. So I figured that was the case. I just thought I would ask. How did you even find this community, this whole slut cloud community? Is that a term for it? Do you have like a little group chat or like t-shirts or is it like the YMCA? Sorry, I shouldn't make jokes. Not like a community.
I have my own slut cloud community, but slut cloud communities are everywhere. And usually you can find them through kink communities. So if you go to FetLife, they have meetups and you can go to meetups and munches and you meet people and they'll have play events where you can go and it's a very sexy event and that can turn it into its own community. A lot of poly people weirdly are dancers, like social dancers, like blues, fusion, swing. Lots of polyamory in those areas and a lot of them are all banging each other too. Those are slut clouds. I'm part of the rationalist community, and there's not that many women in the rationalist community, but all the women here are usually banging a bunch of people. I've started throwing orgies, and the orgies have turned into sort of a slut cloud because I'm friends with all the people who go to the orgies, all the ladies. So like, I'm in a group chat with all the ladies, for example, and so sometimes we'll like recommend guys. Like one of us like goes on a date with a guy, and like if he's really good at sex, we'll be like, hey guys, this guy f***s really well. Y'all should try him. You know, so it's like a recommend. So everybody goes and f***s that guy to see if they like him. Or you could do warnings like, oh, I banged this guy. I don't think he was that good. I wouldn't recommend, you know, trying to f*** him. Like stuff like that. So we have our little like whisper network about like which guys are on the good at sex list. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I'm sorry. I need to work on my expressiveness. I'm a really expressive person. I don't mean anything by it. So it really is like a workout class. Like when you go to the YMCA or Equinox or whatever, and you're like, I really like this instructor or this person didn't do a good job. It's like that. Is that the level it's talked about?
Yeah, or like, basically. People just sort of consult the group. Like very recently, somebody was like, hey, does anybody know this guy? He asked me on a date. Like, can anybody vet him? And then, you know, we can have to have opinions about it. But then we all go to the orgies and we all f*** the same guy. So we all have like so many shared sexual partners, all of us. So.
Wow. So you found this community by the group you were in. It sounds like the dance community, the rational community. Is that what you said?
Rationalist, yeah.
Okay, rationalists. How is the level of consent at these parties for women? Can you describe that? Like these orgies, are there lots of rules people follow? If someone breaks them, are they permanently banned? What happens?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's like a whole community that's been going on for many decades. Mm-hmm. And so there's definitely like cultural norms. People share knowledge. When I started throwing my orgies, we went and we talked to the people who run a bunch of the other like orgy groups to get info about like, how do you handle when somebody breaks the rules? Like, what are your norms? How do you handle admissions? So it's definitely established. There's one kink community. If you want to go to one of the orgies, you have to go to a training beforehand, like a different event. You have to go to get to have a training where you go through like a bunch of consent exercises and people talk about different types of scenarios to expect and what the norms are. And then once you get certified from that course, then you can go and attend the orgy. This is like an example of one way that people do it. Not everybody does it. But consent is usually taken extremely seriously at stuff like this because you're playing with higher risk stuff, right? So people often have exercises. So my orgies I run are CNC ones, which means that people don't ask before they have sex with you. And so we have a whole system to make sure that this is done safely. We have wristbands, we have lanyards, we have safe words. We make people run through exercises in the beginning where people are like actively say the safe words and practice physically with people having them touch and not touch and whatever. And if people violate this at all, we ban them. We had one guy at one of our parties just forget to read the rules. And we're like, that's not an excuse, bro. This is a high risk event. You can't f around like that. And we banned him permanently from our parties. And we told the other orgy groups that this guy is blacklisted. And so he got banned from the entire scene in the entire city. So some people share blacklists, some people don't. The problem is you're running into the issue where there's a bunch of people who are down to play very well. And I think this is great. You're selecting for excellent people, but you're also selecting for like, if you're a guy who wants to push boundaries sexually with women, you're going to be attracted to these kinds of events and communities because like you might view it as a way of like getting farther with women here than you would normally. And so you have to be extra stringent to make sure that the people who are drawn to something like that understand that, no, this is not a place where you're allowed to do that. And there's going to be harsh consequences if you fuck up at all.
That makes sense. So that's how you found your polyamorous community. To me, sex has always seemed like a very special bonding experience. When you sleep with someone, do you feel a level of deep connection and the stickiness of relationships? I know you were in a monogamous relationship. Did it feel different then? Can you just describe that for me?
I don't think it felt different for me when I was in a monogamous relationship. I think there's a mild error people make. Not everyone. I think this is the same for everybody. For example, think of like the way that nudity processes. If you're a doctor and you see nudity all the time, it's not sexual. If you see your wife take it off slowly in the bedroom, it's probably very sexual. I used to throw naked parties where people would come in. It was just a normal party, no sexual contact allowed. You would just happen to be naked. And I would have people tell me before coming to the party, like, I'm really worried. What if I get a boner? This is going to be really titillating. And then people would come to the party and then afterwards come to me and be like, this was shockingly normal. I thought it was going to be a big deal and really tense. But like after the first 10 minutes, you acclimate so fast and the body stopped being sexual. And you're like, oh, in the context that's given, it's just a totally different experience. I think like people's brains are super good at context making. And I think that the same is good for sex. I think most people experience sex in a very like romanticized, intense, you wait to have sex until you know the guy is dedicated, which makes sense for historical reasons. You know, sex leads to babies, of course. And so I think most people experience sex in that context and aren't aware that you can change the context of sex in a way that doesn't take away from the original context. Like a doctor seeing naked bodies for his job is probably still going to find his wife erotic because those are just completely different context. So I think like I can have sex where I don't feel love at all. And I can have sex that's very connective. And it doesn't feel like those really interact with each other whatsoever for me. Sex with my partner is super bonding and I feel really affectionate towards him afterwards. But sex with strangers in an orgy isn't. It's like very intense in a different way, but I don't think they impact each other at all.
I've never thought about it like that. What does love feel like for you? Can you just describe it?
Well, people use the word love to refer to a whole bunch of different subcontexts. So I definitely feel like attachment, loyalty, bondedness, familiarity. There's that. I feel like attraction, physical chemistry, like warm, fuzzy sparklies. I feel like lots of comfort when he's around, like friendship also, trust. There's also like deep universal love, recognizing someone as a person, the compassion that you have for someone as a conscious being. I don't know. There's like lots of things that people use the word love to describe.
You're so interesting. I have so many questions for you. Do you want to be mindful of your time? So I'll try to think of the best ones. Polyamory, I feel like it's the big buzzword now. Again, I was telling you earlier, I feel like I cannot click on a news site without seeing some sort of article on it. It's the new frontier. People are having children in polyamorous marriages, and it's becoming more commonplace. I live in Austin. I went to a coffee shop and I was talking to a barista who is in a committed relationship with two other people, and they're all planning on raising a child together. How do you think our culture has been impacted by polyamory, both the negative and positive?
Well, not very. I don't think people are very friendly to being poly or any sort of openness at all. It's pretty rough. I like ran a series of polls where I was asking people like, how negatively or positively do you anticipate people would react if you came out as like trans to your parents, gay to your boss? How likely would it be you get fired? And there's one on that. I did three categories, like homework. Oh, and friends. Would your friends have negative repercussions? And poly was rated the worst for all three. People would have worse reactions to all three of them if you came out as poly versus if you came out as trans or gay. So this is some indication that the stigma is quite bad. People view polyamory as cheating in some way. And I think polyamory is threatening more towards people because they view it as something that could impact their own relationship. People might feel very comfortable that their husband is straight. Oh, I'm not worried. He's going to go f*** a man. But they might be very worried that he like hears about polyamory and goes, oh, maybe I want to f*** another woman, right? And so I think this is why that concept itself is so scary. People have a very strong reaction. They have a concept of like men being cucked and not men.
What
like,
is cocked?
What's his face?
Huh? What is cocked?
Cucked is a fetish where guys like people have used it as a term for an emasculated man who like can't own his woman or something. It's like a general insult. So like a lot of guys call my boyfriend cucked, right? Because he lets me have sex with other men. I'm like, dude, he is having sex with so many other women. Okay, I don't know. You forgot that part. But there's this famous YouTuber, what's his face? He used to do the Content Cop series. Anyway, very famous YouTuber. And then at some point he came out defending his girlfriend who is an OnlyFans girl. And just people hated him for that. People were like, you're not a man. You know, you're f***ing letting your girlfriend be a f***. It's just really strong stigma against it. And we've seen like very small headway. There's like Professor Mortensen in The Wonder Woman was a movie released about a poly relationship. And occasionally you catch a little bits of hints of poly stuff going on. But if you compare to the amount of media made about poly people to the media made about any other marginalized category, like trans people or gay people or minorities or anything else, it's just no comparison. I think that trans people are widely stigmatized and they don't have very much acceptance, but there's still way more trans people in media than there are poly people. Way more. It's insane because poly people are threatening. So I think there's some headway in culture. Like we're starting to see the very beginning hints of this happening, but people just mock it so much. Maybe rightfully so, because poly is difficult to do well for various reasons. We don't have a manual for this in the same way monogamous people do. Monogamous people get grown up on Disney movies and literally every romantic plot ever is monogamous. And it's a three-way triangle. The tension is because it has to resolve in a monogamous relationship. So we just constantly see how monogamous relationships go and what the norms are. We don't have this for polyamory. We're really playing on hard mode. So I think rightfully so, a lot of polyamorous relationships just are like clumsy and people don't know how to do it because it's f***ing stigmatized and there's no guidebook. So it's really difficult. And also a lot of people who are trying polyamory are doing so because they're attempting to save a monogamous marriage or relationship. It's a very common reason for trying it, which is doomed, right? Disproportionately, the people who are trying this lifestyle are doing it from a damaged relationship. So of course it's going to explode and have a terrible experience. So I think like this combination of things just gives poly a really bad rap in ways that are too nuanced for people to understand why that bad rap exists.
Yeah, many facial expressions I just saw from you right now. I will say just from friends I have had who've been in monogamous relationships that have opened them up to fix problems, it always ends in them breaking up. There's no judgment for me, but I identify as, you know, very monogamous. So the only exposure I've really had to polyamorous relationships is people opening up their relationship and then eventually breaking up. It's not that I have judgment against it, but whenever I hear about people in polyamorous relationships, my first thought is, oh, they're probably going to break up and end up with their new partner. All of the time, that's what has happened. Do you feel like it's because there aren't? Yeah.
I read this study on relationships where I asked people, how long have you been in a relationship? Are you, you know, the spectrum poly to monogamous? And then a bunch of questions about quality. How much do you trust each other? Share each other's secrets? How often do you have sex? What's the homework? Are you satisfied? How are your fights going? And very monogamous people had pretty good. The more poly you were, the worse your ratings were until you got very poly and then it went back up again. So basically monogamous people and poly people had roughly equivalent qualities of relationships reported. Poly people even had very slightly better. Especially around like secret holding, like poly people were much more honest, reported being much more honest with their partner, although there was less codependence. So like less life being intertwined. Anyway, the relationships are roughly equal. But if you look at the frequency of poly relationships, like I said, most people are fully monogamous, slightly fewer people are slightly monogamous, slightly fewer people are middle, and then slightly polyamorous is fewer, and then the very polyamorous people are the smallest category. So if you're looking at this graph, this huge shape of quality, this means that the very poly people are having a great time. Their relationships last just as long as the monogamous ones. They have great satisfactory ratings, but you're very rarely going to see people who are fully committed to being poly. You just aren't. You're going to find people who are monogamous who are trying a little bit of poly. Or in the middle ground, when people are poly, it doesn't go well. It's usually because maybe one partner wants to be more poly than the other. And then there's some conflict over that and they're trying to find a compromise. Or it's like somebody wants to be poly and they do a don't ask, don't tell thing. Okay, fine. You can f other people, but I don't want to know about it, right? So the majority of non-monogamous relationships that are done by people who are not fully committing to doing it. They don't know that they want it. They're doing it to fix problems or they're doing it to try and make a partner happy. And that's just really going to lead to terrible outcomes. But in my world, I'm around much more poly people. A lot of the friends I know were fully committed. I'm fully committed. I haven't been monogamous in over 10 years. I have absolutely no intention of going back at all. And our relationships are great. The whole thing where people describe poly drama and people exploding and going with a new person, I very rarely see that. But the thing is, this kind of population that I'm in, the fully committed to polyamory thing, it's just rarer to find that. Most people aren't doing that.
You know, when people talk about being gay or straight or bisexual, I'm not denying there are people who are truly bisexual, but most of the time people, I feel like, tend to be one or the other. When I meet people who are bi, it's like they mostly date women and maybe like one man, or they mostly date men and maybe one or two women. Do you feel like polyamory is like that? Like people say there's a spectrum. Honestly, I kind of feel like people either are or they aren't. I don't really see people as being in the middle. People
yeah.
are kind of in the middle. It's like you've got relationship problems you're not being honest about.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. I mean, based on what people self-report, it's not bimodal, it's linear. Because for me, it feels like an orientation. When I was with my first monogamous boyfriend, I hadn't heard of what poly was. You do monogamy because that's what you're supposed to do. And like, I found out he'd been sexting with another girl. And I was like, grr, you bad, don't sex. Because I knew I was supposed to be mad about it. And so I was like, yeah, I get to be a little righteous, but I didn't care. Because I was like, what is this? This doesn't impact me. Like, we're having sex, great. Our relationship's lovely. He loves me. Nothing bad happened to me because he was sexting another girl. Nothing at all. And so I wasn't really upset. And then not long later, like a year later, I met somebody at a party and he was like, yeah, I'm poly. And I was like, what's that? He's like, well, we're not exclusive. Like my wife and I, we see other people. And I was like, that's me. I was like, instantly, no doubt. I was like, that's what I am. Of course, that's what I'm. That describes me. That instantly resonates with my core. And ever since then, I've never had a single doubt. I've been 100% poly, never looked back, fully committed. When people are monogamous, they're less attractive to me. To me, it functions as an orientation. I would rather die alone than be in a monogamous relationship. Monogamy sounds disgusting to me. And so to me, it's something like some sort of deep psychological thing in the way that I'm wired. And some other people are like that too. And we get along great. We all have relationships that it functions pretty well, but other people aren't. I think this is part of it. When you have a kid and the kid is and you're like, oh man, why would you put up with a kid if you're having so many downsides? You probably don't actually regret it. You're like, this is hard, but it's worth it. You made the choice you're in. You're not reevaluating, should I give the kid up for adoption? You're not spending mental cycles on trying to modify, like make decisions about, should I modify my lifestyle? You're like, nope, this is worth it. I am here for the long run. I'm going to handle this and I am 100% behind that. And I think that makes it way less suffering in a way. But like, if you had the option of giving up a kid, if you were not having a great time, if you didn't like the kid that much and you were like, should I not? Then it would probably be way more agonizing because every day you're making the decision, like, is it worth it to continue? Is it worth it to continue? And I think that just like really f***s with your mental health and also makes it harder to make decisions. And a lot of people who are not orientation poly or full dedicated to polyamory like I am, I think they're going through this cycle of like, oh, your partner has sex with somebody else and it's really terrible. It feels bad. And I'm like, it's not a deep, meaningful thing where you know you're committed, like your kid just smeared shit on the walls. It's like, I could stop being poly right now. I could. Am I making the right decision? I don't know. And I think it's just really hard and agonizing. And I can't imagine how people pull that off. If you're not fully poly, it seems like it would be really agonizing.
Do you feel agonized then about being poly? Or you're saying it would feel agonizing if you were in a monogamous relationship?
I would feel agonized in a monogamous relationship. I just remember the frustration I had of being attracted to someone and my boyfriend being like, you can't have sex with him. And I was like, but me having sex with him has absolutely nothing to do with you. I just couldn't understand it. I was like, this doesn't affect you. It's not going to change how I treat you. This is my body. Like, why can't I just go do something with my body? And you, this has nothing to do with you. It was so weird. And it was so frustrating for somebody else to tell me what I was and wasn't allowed to do. I could not handle that. If somebody were like, yeah, you're not allowed to do that, I'd be like, you. But poly is also agonizing sometimes. It used to be a lot more agonizing. And now it's very rarely agonizing. But it used to be hard because for a long time, I processed the experience of jealousy as really bad. But it is, for me, at least, it actually means like the fear that your partner's going to leave you. Oh, you're sitting here, your partner go f*** someone else. And you're like, oh no, they're going to fall in love. He's going to be like, I don't need you anymore, Ayla. He's going to walk away. Even if it's not rational, it is just a really strong felt sense. You become alert and on guard. You're like, oh my God, this is a potential threat to our relationship. In the beginning, that was really hard. I remember the first time I had a boyfriend who had sex with a girl in the next room and I could hear it. I was listening to them f***ing and I was just like sitting there just being like, you can do it. Just like, I couldn't think of anything else. It was really agonizing. But over time, it just fades because it's like, oh, he didn't leave me. He didn't. And anytime I've been afraid of that, it just never happens. And over time, I was like, my body's like, oh, you're just afraid of something and it's going to be fine. And you've seen it be fine over and over and over again. And now I don't feel jealousy that much anymore because my body has learned that there's not actually anything to be afraid of, that you can trust your partner. And so now I watch my boyfriend having sex with other girls sometimes. Just recently, like, we were hanging out at an Airbnb and like one of his girlfriends came over and like, he just like, right in front of me. I was like, do you guys want me to take photos? Like, I like to take photos of them. I sent it to them.
Do you know your attachment style? Do you know, are you your attachment style?
I think by default, I tend to be avoidant, but I think I'm probably secure at this point.
On the not following rules, I feel like a big part of monogamous relationships is the idea that the other person belongs to you. And people who are in monogamous relationships that have been on for a while, right? They like that. People romanticize it. They like it, right? They like having property of blank bracelets or like
a big kink,
Or just the symbol of love. I don't know if I would describe it as like a kink necessarily. Maybe it is. I don't know. I don't. Okay.
I mean, it's totally fine. I think it's like a sexual orientation in a sense.
Before we started our interview, I read about your upbringing, just what was available online. The independence of your body is so important to you. Do you feel like that's related to your childhood or is it your temperament? Do you feel like no matter what, you would have been this way?
Probably a mix of both. My childhood upbringing was a lot more influential to my behavior in like the first probably 6 years after I left home. I think it's much less influencing it now. But I mean, maybe it did. Maybe it instilled with me like a strong, like, this is my body. Don't tell me what I can and can't do kind of thing. But my guess is also it's at least partially temperament. I don't know what the percentage is for both, though.
What do you like when you check out of Airbnbs? They've got all those rules. Are you like, whatever, I don't want to follow these rules.
As long as I'm agreeing, like, okay, we want to make this trade where I give you money and I'm not going to destroy your house. That seems voluntary. I don't have to engage with the Airbnb if I don't want to. So voluntary agreements feel much better to me. That's why I don't think it's like abusive when monogamous couples have relationships, because they're entering into a voluntary arrangement. Like, it's the same way that I don't think that Saudi Arabia couples where the man doesn't allow the woman to talk to anybody is abusive either, because they're entering into a voluntary agreement, a contract that they both know what they're getting into with them.
I have some friends who've moved here from the Middle East, and for them, it wasn't necessarily a voluntary thing. One of my friends, you know, avoided getting deported. Long story on there, but she was not a fan of the culture at all. I mean, when you look at other countries where women have to follow heavy restrictions, I don't know if I would consider that voluntary. But actually, I was going to ask this later on in the interview. I might as well ask it now because we're talking about other countries. Polyamory and polygamy, although I know those are different, in a lot of other countries, women are fighting for the right to be someone's one and only. There are governments and human rights organizations who've come out against polygamy and polyamory. You know, they say it violates the dignity of women. They called for it to be abolished. They say it has harms for women and children. Again, I know polygamy and polyamory are different, but I do hear those arguments presented when people have negative reactions to polyamory. They're like, it's unfair to women. It's like innately abusive towards women. What do you think about that? What's your response to the idea that polyamory is inherently anti-feminist?
So in my data, women who are very polyamorous generally have slightly higher satisfaction than polyamorous men. Men who are monogamous have roughly equal, but if you go very poly, women's scores are higher and men's scores a little bit lower. And also women tend to report having more partners than men. So in a polyamorous society, it's a slight difference, but it seems like it benefits women more than men. If I were trying to fix a conservative religious society, call it polygamous, yeah, I would be like, well, we should make it legal for women to have multiple husbands. Let's say that's just totally fine. Women can marry multiple dudes. I bet you would see guys being like, all right, hold on. I'll agree to just marry you if you just don't marry anybody else. The problem is that, of course, it's brutal to women because it's like, it's literally limiting women's power. That seems like the entire core part of it. Women are literally not allowed to go have multiple partners. Of course, it's going to be asymmetrical.
Few questions around this. It's going to sound kind of jumpy to my listeners, but whatever. When you talk about female empowerment and, you know, making sure that it's equal, if someone were wanting to enter into a polyamorous relationship, how would you recommend they protect themselves? And also, how are you protecting your heart, your body, your emotional resources? What are some strategies you would suggest to people?
Protected against what?
Maybe I'll put it like this. How can someone who wants to be polyamorous make sure that their partner has their best interests at heart? What are some flags to look out for, green or red?
I think there's a thought where like a lot of people sort of do poly for sex reasons. It's like a guy wants to f*** more girls or something. And he's like, come on, babe, just let me f*** more girls. Often this sort of thing comes along with rule dynamics. We can have other people in the relationship, but it can only be a girl. Or we're only going to have threesomes, but just with the girl. Like the one penis policy is like a commonly talked about poly thing that everybody hates.
Wow.
Unicorn hunting. Everybody f***ing hates when like the couple goes because they want to spice up their sex life. So they go find a girl, but she's not allowed to go find a guy. Right. I think this comes out of a desire for like sexual exploration and not deep respect for your partner's agency.
Mm-hmm.
Like for me, the absolute core of this, like the thing that I really hold on to is like, I don't want to tell my partner who they can and can't love. It just feels so important to me. I'm willing to go through a lot of insecurity or pain or drama in order for my partner to have that. And I think a lot of people aren't doing poly for that reason. They're doing it because it's like a guy who wants to have a threesome. And I think this is going to result in a lot of more controlling behavior and a lot more like trampling on what the other person actually wants in order to get their sexual needs met. And it can be a lot of emotional manipulation, like, oh, if you really want to be a cool girl or a cool guy, if you want to be like cool and whatever, you're not going to get jealous. You know, it's just sex. There's a lot of like suppression of emotion. And you said a phrase, I don't think you literally meant it, but like protect yourself against jealousy, right? And I'm like, you shouldn't protect yourself against jealousy. You should feel the jealousy. Jealousy is there to be felt. It's an important emotion trying to tell you something. I think all of the emotions that you have in polyamory, all the fear and the bitterness or the lashing out or insecurity or feeling worthless, like you are going to die if you pretend you're not supposed to have them and try and suppress them. And a lot of, I think, immature poly relationships do a thing where they resort to rules as an attempt to mitigate that, as opposed to deep processing and communication. I think this is why people really hate the unicorn hunting or the one penis policy thing, is because it's not coming out of that deep ideological commitment. It's not coming out of a desire to further intimacy. It's coming out of like, I'm going to try and warp this relationship so that I can have more fun sex with who I want. Which I don't think is very good. There's also one more thing that people really hate. What was it? I don't remember. Okay.
I do want to learn more about it. I feel like right now in the media, it is portrayed so negatively. What do you think is going to happen in the future? I mean, I feel like it's a phenomenon that's definitely here to stay. With dating apps, it's easier to identify people who are also identifying as polyamorous. What do you think is going to happen with marriage, with adoption, and with other, I feel like, things that have historically been limited to monogamous people? Do you think we're going to see a future in which people can marry multiple people at the same time?
We're seeing some things, like I think they passed legislation in Oakland, Berkeley or something, where you can't discriminate against polyamorous marriages or whatever. Or if you're trying to move into a house like as a throuple, you're not allowed to discriminate. So there do seem to be some movements, but I am not optimistic about the stigma going away like it did for gay people or even as fast as it is for trans people, which is very slow. You're right. People fucking hate polyamory and it's quite sad. Poly people aren't allowed to marry each other. For example, like we still don't have rights in that regard. And the legal system is not built to support us. And I don't expect it's going to happen anytime soon. Because everybody knows that monogamous couple that tried to open their relationship and it exploded. And you feel disgust towards them because like, do you not love each other because you're having sex with other people? Like there's just so much like personal. For me, I think monogamy is kind of gross. In the same way gay people might find that sex with straight people is kind of gross. Or a gay man might find sex with a woman is gross. I'm not judging it. I fully support people who want to do it, but I have an aversion to it. And I think like monogamous people have an even stronger aversion towards poly people in ways where like what they think that should be legislated or like controlled come out through that. People use disgust-based reasoning. That's really sad. Because I know so many poly people who are living like wonderful lives and their relationships are exploding just as much or not less so than relationship people's marriages. I know long-term, multi-decade poly relationships with kids flourishing who have a great child rearing because they have more hands to help. It just seems like it's a great and functional world and the media just doesn't get it and doesn't understand the challenges that exist to make poly harder. I don't know. I'm ranting and quite sad about it. There's this movie, Bajiro Mastani, which is a very famous Indian movie, did very well over there. And in it, they have a depiction of pseudo polyamory. It's like a guy who decided to marry two wives. So it's not quite, but like the wives, at one point, they were like the wives like reconciled with each other. One of them made a peace offering to the other. I fucking bawled my eyes out. I saw it was like a, it's not even like a full poly thing, but to see anything even a little bit like me in my life represented in a movie was just emotionally not like devastating, but like raw. I was like, I'll take any I can get. It's just, it's really isolating and alone and shitty. And I don't expect it to go well. I don't think it's going to go nearly as well as the other fight for rights that occur. People have a long way to go.
Do you consider discrimination against polyamorous people to be on the same level as discrimination against people who are gay or people who are trans? Do you think it's
absolutely.
Like, okay. Yeah, you think like.
Absolutely. People say it's not quite the same because polyamory is a choice. But when people were having all the arguments about gay people and they would say being gay is not a choice. And I was like, why does that matter? So what if it's a choice? That like the whole like, oh, do you have control of it or not? Are you saying that being gay is only okay because it just happened to you and you're a victim and you can't be blamed for this thing? Like it's inherently bad. And but if we take away the responsibility from you, it's no longer bad. I'm like, the argument of like the choice thing for gay people is just, it's just frustrated me really hard because I'm like, well, what if there is something that comes along one day that is a choice? Like, are you just going to suddenly be like, okay, yep, you're Or like, what if like for somebody being gay is a choice? Like some people report that this is the case for them. And I'm like, I think they should be treated the same as everybody else. Like a choice is still an expression of who you are. And for me, I don't feel like poly is a choice. I know a lot of people do. Poly people have debates about this all the time. People are like, polyamory is a lifestyle. I think for a lot of people, this is correct. In the same way that maybe like being bisexual is kind of a lifestyle, you could argue. But for me, this is just like a deep facet of the way that I love. It's just who I am. If you took it away from me, I wouldn't be me. I forget why I'm ranting about this. I feel really passionately about it.
Well, I can tell. I love it when people are passionate about things. I mean, I've always seen it kind of like as being vegetarian or vegan. I'm getting the vibe from you. That's definitely not that. It is an ingrained sexuality. I'm just expressing how I felt before our interview. I always thought it was kind of like, but you would prefer to eat vegetarian. It makes you happy to eat vegetarian. You're not going to be happy if you eat meat. You might emotionally be devastated if someone forced you to eat meat and you're a vegetarian, but I don't see it as the same as like having a food allergy. To me, that's how I felt before an interview. Does that make sense? Does that sound weird?
I think this analogy is probably true for a lot of poly people. The thing is there is variance. Yeah.
Yeah. For you, monogamy is a food allergy. Like I have an allergy to wheat. If I eat it, I break out in hives. Monogamy would break out in hives.
Oh yeah.
I'm like not having a good time. What consenting adults do, it's just not my business. I'm not polyamorous. I don't care if other people are. However, there's a bias I have or a judgment, and I'd love to know what you think about it. I don't know how I feel about people who are polyamorous while they're raising children. To me, it feels very different than being in a polyamorous relationship with other adults. Before our interview, I read a few Reddit threads from grown-up children of polyamorous parents. It's a very interesting rabbit hole that I'd recommend for any of my listeners. The general sentiment was that the polyamorous parents were neglectful and a little self-centered. Some people did say it was fine and that they liked having multiple people involved, but a lot of people said like, oh, my parents were less involved with me because of it, or I have attachment issues. The one that I read that summarized the negative experiences in the thread the most, I was like, I have to read this to her and see what she thinks about it. My mother was involved in a poly relationship for a while when I was a kid. It was very confusing. For a while, there were four of us kids around, me, the kid of the other woman, and the two kids of the man. We were all pretty confused and resentful. Our favorite joke was pick a number and wait in line. You stated that you really want to raise children. How do you plan on making sure that you and your partner can make sure that your kids get appropriate nurturing and care?
We still haven't decided about kids. I would like to have kids. It feels a little frustrating to me because like it feels a little bit like I imagine you could find forums from 15 years ago, people raised by gay parents. You have to compare it against base rates. Are poly kids more or less upset than people who are made out of monogamous relationships, maybe who divorced, right? It's possible that polyamory would have saved some divorces, although I doubt it. I agree that a lot of people who are currently non-monogamous are in relationships and people who are monogamous. Like I said, most people have one foot in, are doing it to save the relationship, trying to spice up their sex life. They're not doing it because they're actually poly, like in some sort of deep, meaningful way. And I wouldn't be shocked if people who are kids of people in relationships like that have a worse time. Like, for example, the thing that you read is like, his mom was in a relationship for a while. It sounds like once when we were kids. It doesn't sound like a full poly woman to me. That sounds like somebody who is dabbling. So I wouldn't be shocked if, yes, people who are less or more monogamous in general have worse kids. I think I would be quite shocked if people who are kids of people who are fully polyamorous, like the people who are completely committed, have worse outcomes. Mainly because those people tend to have their shit together a lot more. Also, having lots of adults around to help care for you was the norm for most of human history. People would live in big tribes and help raise each other's kids all the time. And I don't think kids really got confused about that. What kids want is people there to love and care for them and then not leave. I think like one question is like, well, if you're casually dating, maybe kids get attached to people who leave. I think this is relatively easy to fix. If I were a poly person and I were afraid of this happening to my kids, I'd probably not bring a partner around until I thought that there's a very good chance they were going to spend a long time in my kids' lives. Stuff like that.
I feel like there's a difference between having stable partners and then having people who go in and out. Because attachment issues for kids stem from abandonment or lack of attachment to a partner. So if you have a partner, a parental figure who a child attaches to, and then they disappear, it can be really bad for them.
Not hard to be poly in a way where the people you date aren't parental figures. There's so many ways to be poly. If you're just like a husband and wife stably raising kids, and then twice a month, one of them goes out to go on a date, a casual date, and hook up with this one other person they're dating. Even if that person comes around, they're never going to be a parental figure. Like when I was a kid, we knew adults all the time that would come over regularly, be friends of my parents. I would hang out with them. We'd play and they would leave. Maybe we move cities or they move or something. And that never had any problems with me. That didn't cause attachment. I think kids everywhere know adults and then the adults go away. This is just a fact of life and we don't freak out about it. I think if that person is a much more involved part of raising the kid, then probably that would leave more of an impact. But I think like that's kind of a minority of poly situations. Or at least it could be. Most of the poly parents that I know tend to be too busy with their kids to date. And so either they're in like very stable polycule triads where everybody's living in the same house and they're in it for life. They're like, we are all raising these kids together. We live together. Maybe we've even married each other, even though you're not allowed to do that legally. Either it's like that or they're just too tired to go on dates with other people. Like when I was growing up, there was a friend of my family's who was over all the time. And this lady, she was very good friends with my parents. She would just be over constantly. She taught me how to play games. And in hindsight, she could have very easily been dating my dad. She wasn't. They were not poly at all. But like they could have been in a relationship. Functionally, that would have looked like a poly relationship where she was over all the time and like very involved in us kids' lives. And I don't know. It just seems like kids have that kind of relationship with adult friends all the time. And it's like, what does it do to the kid if the adults also happen to be having sex sometimes? Like, I don't really understand why this is supposed to be such a giant impact on the kid's development here.
On that note, what do you think about gender roles in polyamory? Do you feel more feminine? Do you feel like you have masculine qualities that you take on? Can you just tell me about that?
The full poly thing, not the partial, but like the full poly world that I'm in tends to be pretty general ambivalent a bit. It tends to be quite liberal circles, although my circles are more libertarian as opposed to liberal. But there's very, very high overlap with gender nonconformity and kink in poly circles. Like statistically speaking, you see trans and non-binary people, super, super high rates of non-monogamy. So I don't understand really how that works. But it has generally not been very traditional gender roles at all. Because most conservative people who value traditional gender roles don't usually do polyamory.
No, if they do, they do the open marriage that burns up. That's just anecdotally what I've seen. When you go on dates, do you like it when guys pay for you? Do you prefer to pay for yourself? This is just beside the point, but I'm curious.
And we usually split or flip a coin, or sometimes whoever's richer pays.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, that makes sense. It's like who's got more resources pays. Interesting. So the masculine, feminine, the traditional roles, it would make sense for them not to be in polyamorous relationships because that's like a more conservative thing. Are there any elements of conservative monogamous relationships that you like and wish you could incorporate in your relationship that are just at odds with being polyamorous? The idea of monogamy is disgusting. I get it. The idea of being vegan is disgusting to me. But there's a vegan dessert I like. It's delicious. Tofu chocolate mousse. It's like amazing. I'm like, this is so good. The ingredients all disgust me, but it's delicious. Is there anything like that for you with conservative monogamous relationships? This whole thing disgusts me, but I do like this one. one item.
I like beating out other women, maybe. Although usually it manifests in small traits, right? Like, I know that I'm not better than other women in a bunch of ways. My boyfriend will go on a date with a girl, ask, what did you like about her? And he'll list a bunch of things. And often I can't compete with that stuff. I'm like, oh, she's just way better at this skill than I am. Or like, you were more compatible with her among these things. But I feel like in order to survive my psychology, I just have to have one thing where I'm better at than the competition. I just need to feel like I'm uniquely valued, or I have at least one specific unique thing that at least along that axis ranks me higher than other ladies. I don't mind losing in the other areas, but I have to be number one just somewhere. And that feels like monogamous thinking to me a little bit, but I just like it and I need it.
So you mentioned appearance not really being the one. Where do you need to be number one? When I'm in a relationship, I would be number one in everything. So you're right, I feel like that is monogamous. I don't want someone to like think someone else is prettier or nicer or funnier than me. Words related things, like someone can run faster than me, big deal. So can like 99% of the population. Congratulations. What are the things you're like, I've got to be the highest in these?
Well, I used to want to be pretty until I realized I'm not that pretty, like not compared
to... No, you're beautiful. Made that whole blog where you're like, I'm not... Yes, you are. You look like Liv Tyler. You're objectively very beautiful.
I appreciate it. However, I discount Ben Liv. I'm very secure about my appearance. I don't mind the way I look, to be clear. I'm aware that I'm not a supermodel, basically. If I were like, oh, I'm going to apply for like walking down a runway, I don't think people would take me. But I'm not okay with that. I'm okay with that, to be clear. You don't have to reassure me.
No, I'm not reassured. You have, what is it, like 200,000 people who follow you on Twitter? Sorry, if you are not super beautiful, everything you post is very interesting. But you are an extremely attractive person. Like, you have COVID. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you're wearing makeup right now, but illness that kills a lot of people. You still look gorgeous.
Thank you. To be fair, I am over COVID. I just have the lingering cough thing going on, but yeah.
Yeah, no, you're really beautiful. Thank
you. I appreciate it. However, I know that I'm not the most beautiful woman on the planet, which is okay. And like, sometimes my boyfriend like will rank up like, is she prettier than me? And he'll be like, yes or no. So like, I know where I fall in my prettiness in comparison to the other girl he's dating. So I know I'm that number one prettiest girl. Although he likes the feel of my flesh the most, which is nice.
If you're serious and keep it together, just love the feel of your flesh. Are you eating Hannibal Lecter? What is this?
Yeah, because I'm like got like a weirdly soft and firm like fat feel. I don't know. I'm like, okay, I'll take it. Like, he just really likes like amazing body.
Curious, I'm going to release the video part of our podcast. This is like, by the way, when I said this is why I don't make video podcasts, this is why. Like, split flesh. Oh my God.
Yeah. But I do like, I just need to be number one in something, and it doesn't have to be any particular thing. With my current partner, I think I'm like probably number one in something around introspection and self-acceptance. Whereas my past partner, I think I was number one in something like being f***ed up and nerdy or something. With my current partner, I have a lot of, I think I'm relatively intellectual or smart or something. But my current partner is currently writing novel theses about abstract mathematics. So I just can't compete. I'm not number one in that regard, but I was with my other partner when the girls he dates are like much less intellectual, right? So that it just really depends. And I don't mind. I just feel like I need to find like one way in which we connect that feels special.
All right. If I dated someone and they told me that it was not the most beautiful girl in the world to them, beautiful woman, I guess women now, women always, I don't think I'd be able to be in a relationship with that person. That would just feel so terrible to me. Even if it wasn't true, I would want him to say that. Do you feel like there's more honesty in polyamorous relationships than there are in monogamous relationships?
Well, at least in mine. When he told me it wasn't that pretty, it was really painful because I had never had a boy just be like, you're not that pretty to me before. In context, it made more sense. He said this, but like, I feel a lot better afterwards or something. There's a way where a part of me was insecure about my appearance and like really was holding on to this hope that maybe I was like a lot hotter than I thought I was. You know, like the secret girl fantasy of maybe if I take off my glasses, actually everybody's going to fall for me. You know, that feeling? And there's a way where it's like, one, I'm like, okay, so I'm not like the prettiest girl he's dating, but then just seeing that it doesn't matter. The way that our connection and like our sex and the way that we're affectionate towards each other and love each other, I'm like, oh, I don't have to be the prettiest woman. That's not the thing that matters to him. He finds me attractive and lovely to look at because he feels so affectionate towards me and it's not impacting our connection at all. And like once I just got to see that, suddenly the weight that I had on my appearance really fell away and I became like way less afraid of aging or like, do I have, like, is my face puffy one day? I was like, yeah, maybe my peep is fuzzy. It doesn't matter because he loves me anyway. It's just so nice.
I don't want to belabor this too much because it sounds like you have your mind made up on your attractiveness level. But there are literally computer programs you can run your face through. You have a perfectly symmetrical face to me.
I did a study on my face.
What did your study say?
So what I did is I got a whole bunch of photos of women, some AI, some real. And I included a face of just a straight on image of me in that. And I had people rate it on a scale from 1 to 10. So I got to see where I compared and what my number was. And it was not good. So looking at the people who didn't know who I was, because I asked, are you familiar with me? So if they're familiar with me, I think that would impact the rating because familiarity makes you view people differently. So of the people who didn't know who I was, I got rated a 4 out of 10. This is just, and like the other women that I was right next to were not that attractive. So I was like, okay, I make a ton of money escorting. For example, people pay me many, many thousands of dollars. So obviously I'm not ugly, but like, I'm clearly not a supermodel, right? It's fine. It's totally fine.
Okay. My personal opinion is that like, I would rate you like an 8 or a 9.
This is very flattering lighting. I have direct on lighting and I do have a little bit of makeup on. Not a lot, but.
Okay. Whatever. I think you're pretty. I guess we'll just put a cap in
there. I appreciate it.
Darn it. That kind of screws up my next question, which is like, you are very beautiful.
He did rate me above average. He said you're pretty cute. You're kind of pretty.
Okay.
He said you're even prettier with makeup on. You're just not like that pretty, you know? So I think I am a little pretty.
The D is in the eye of the beholder. And yeah, okay. Don't want to talk about that. The whole thing I was going to ask was, I think you're objectively very beautiful. When you talk about your partner having a harem of women and you not having a harem of men, you could have a harem of men. And you could also be with someone who's probably roughly equivalent to him in terms of how he makes you feel and what he looks like and where he is. I don't know anything about him other than the fact that he said you were above average. Why not be with someone who only wants to be with you and potentially you have other partners? I feel like you're pretty and smart, all these things. Why are you in this specific polyamorous dynamic? To me, it doesn't sound super favorable to you. Why not go into one that is more favorable?
I would love to date more guys. I just don't feel interested in them, really. And also, like, him having sex with a lot of women also feels favorable to me because it makes me feel better about being the closest partner to a very sexually successful guy. It makes me feel like I'm successful by proxy. So I don't really think of it as favorable, really. But to be fair, I mean, I've had sex with more people. He threw my birthday gangbang. So yeah, I've had sex with more people than he has this year. He helps a lot. He organizes things that get me right.
I read it. I got to, I think, like 3/4 of the way through. Like, I should probably read this for our interview. There was a part I wanted to ask you about where you were talking about not enjoying it or feeling overwhelmed with polyamory. There is a huge emphasis placed on like when you feel uncomfortable, you can stop. Why didn't you apply it then? This is outside of polyamory. I was just wondering.
I like feeling uncomfortable a lot of the time.
Oh, okay.
I do stop it sometimes. Like occasionally in kink scenes, I will call red if I decide I actually don't want it. But I often find novel sensations are really interesting. And like having a whole bunch of guys having sex with me was really interesting. Because like my psychology was doing interesting things. I was noticing, I was thinking interesting thoughts about the guys. When there was a pause, I had interesting emotional processing. Super fascinating. And a lot of it was kind of uncomfortable. I was like, oh, I notice I'm managing these guys' experiences. Oh, I notice I'm suppressing a genuine reaction I want to have with some of them and make them upset. And like, that doesn't feel that good. But I'm still really glad I did it. It was super fascinating.
Why not go skydiving or scuba diving or getting really close to sharks? Is danger something that you find attractive?
I don't like roller coasters. I don't like visceral things that cause adrenaline. Not very into that. But I am into really
pretty, right? That was like, well,
that was like a different kind of adrenaline, right? That was like like what happens when I am subject to these forces. And for what it's worth, he threw that party because of the previous gangbang. I was like, this was the best experience ever. I want to do it again. And so my boyfriend saw that and he was like, oh, well, maybe we just need to add more guys. And this was the best experience ever. I want to do it again. And so my boyfriend saw that and he was like, oh, well, maybe we just need to add more guys. And that's why he did the birthday gangbang, because he saw I liked it so much. So we went into the gangbang trying to replicate that sensation. And for various reasons, it didn't work because it wasn't quite the same context. But I think it's worth a shot to try it. But it's just like the psychological part is really interesting. Like I like taking psychedelics and then like listening to scary music, for example, because I like witnessing my brain go through that process, because it's fascinating to watch yourself like try and cope with things. But I don't like skydiving or roller coasters or any of that stuff. Going fast on motorbikes, no thank you.
I was going to ask you what your partner gets you for Valentine's Day, but I don't want to know now. I think I get the sentiment. This is very interesting. This is super fascinating. I love psychology. I took a human sexuality class in college, and we did not talk about polyamory at all. Oh my God, that class was like a show and tell. Like everybody was raising their hands, sharing everything. We didn't really talk about polyamory. It's really not discussed in, I feel like, any kind of system. A human sexuality class you take at UT Austin, I feel like that's a prime place to talk about it. And yet we just didn't. Why is that? By the way, it's certainly no less offensive than many of the other topics we covered. Like, you know, in Brazil, people bite off people's eyebrows during lovemaking. That was something we learned. It's always stuck with me. It's like a thing. Intense. Anyway, that was the question. Why didn't I learn about it in my human sexuality class? Kind of question I'm asking you.
Same reason you never see it in media, I guess. I don't know. Like, it seems like a oversight of them to miss talking about this. I just want to tell you. I'm just not surprised. People act like poly doesn't exist, and then when it does happen, they say it's bad. And so it's like, of course, they wouldn't cover such an important thing. I don't know.
Again, it's probably just because all of the people I know who are in polyamorous relationships, either it ended in like a fiery, explosive breakup where one person was really upset, and then if it wasn't a terrible ending, it was basically like the two people that initially opened the relationship just split off with new partners. I was talking to one of my friends. She's been on my podcast a few times. She was telling me that people in open relationships, the person who decides to open up the relationship first is the less happy one, regardless of if it's a man or a woman. You hear all the time about how like men who open the relationship up find themselves to be unhappy because the woman is able to get lots of guys and it's harder for guys to do that. But actually, it's the person who opens up the relationship that winds up less happy. Why do you think that is?
If we're talking about the class of people who are poly or open relationships to try and save a relationship, one theory, I don't have strong evidence for this, is that if people are opening the relationship up, they're thinking about sex and having sex with more people. And most likely they're not getting their sexual needs met in that relationship. Pretty common is like a guy, usually it's the guy, not always, but usually like the woman is not having as much sex as he would like to be having with her. Very common complaint in relationships. So maybe he is the one that then opens the relationship. Like if a relationship is open to solve the problem, then the person initiating the solution is probably more upset by the problem.
Oh my God, I have so many questions for you. So, you know, I searched your Twitter about polyamory. So many posts about it that are interesting. There was a general sentiment in some of them that you expressed that we've talked about. I just wanted to ask you about. One underrated benefit of polyamory is that you don't have to dump someone when they meet someone 25% better for you. You can just start dating them. Another one was talking about how you were insecure and afraid of your partner leaving you. And once fixed, polyamory became enjoyable. An insecurity for you, it seems like, is the idea your partner might leave you for someone else. Polyamory solves that because they're not leaving you for someone else. Do you think that that's a defense mechanism of some kind? Do you feel like it fully solves the issue? To me, honestly, I would feel like maybe my partner has more avenues for replacing me because they're more able to explore with other people. Obviously, that's not how you feel. Can you just describe it for me?
I think it kind of is true, though. I have been dumped by a partner because when we went poly, he met another girl who wanted to be monogamous, and then he chose her over me. But like, I wouldn't want to be in a relationship with the guy who would want another woman more. I'm glad that was good. If I and that guy had been monogamous, then he would never have been able to find this person he was more compatible with than with me. And I'm like, I don't want to keep people from, like, if somebody could leave because of polyamory, then they should leave. I only want to be dating the people who have survived all of that pressure and have decided to stay with me anyway. I don't know why I would want to be in a relationship with somebody who would leave me if I let them, you know?
How do you feel about infidelity as a social concept? I have always viewed infidelity as really bad.
You can look at cultures across the world, and often it's common. Usually it's like, oh, the man can have a mistress, and the embarrassment is you're not supposed to be found out. Have you seen that one video going around of people interviewing girls in Japan being like, if a guy sees a prostitute, is that cheating? And the girls are like, what? No. Or the common thing in France, you know, you can have a mistress. This is not considered that terrible. So this is cultural. The whole infidelity is the end of the world is very like American Western concept. I understand intellectually that people find it to be really bad emotionally. When I see a guy cheat, like, or a woman cheat in a movie, I'm like, of course you would. I mean, it's not great that you didn't tell the person, but like, they're hot. Like, why wouldn't, it has no impact. Because in my brain, I'm like, it just doesn't have any practical impact on the original partner. So why are we concerned about it? I don't know. And I'm an escort. So I've had a lot of guys cheat on me with their wives. And for what it's worth, I'm willing to do this. Sorry, cheat on their wives with me. Yeah. I'm willing to do this as an escort, but I will not do this if I'm not being paid. If I met a guy and we really got along and he wanted sex with me, but he had a monogamous girlfriend, I would absolutely not f*** him. I'd have to go talk to the girlfriend first and be like, hey, I would like to have sex with your boyfriend. Are you okay with that? But for some reason, it's just different when it's professional. It's like the lines are really hard. And like, I get that it's not good. Lying is bad. Lying is bad. Ideally, you would talk to your wife. Ideally, you would try really hard to find a solution. But I also have sympathy for people who are in that situation.
Do you feel any guilt around it?
No, I don't mind. I don't really. I think I always felt like confused about it at first, but now I don't really feel guilty. One is because if it weren't me, the guy would see another sex worker. It's just he picked somebody out of the book. It's going to be someone. And I would rather it be me because I am better at talking to them about their wives and encouraging them to talk about their wives than probably other sex workers. And two, it feels so constrained. I know that I'm tested. I get super tested regularly, so I know I'm safe. I'm not somebody he works with, so I'm not going to try and like win his heart and fuck up his marriage or anything. So I'm like just like this alternate, safe, little different reality world. And he was going to have one of them anyway. And I sometimes feel bad for guys who I get the impression where they just haven't tried to talk to their wife. Because I usually ask, are you married? And if they're married, I ask, so what's going on with your wife? I really try and talk about it. And occasionally I get a guy who's just like, I can tell, I'm like, okay, the story you're giving me, I don't really believe. There's something weird about it. And I just don't think you're really trying with your wife at all. And then I kind of feel bad. I'm like, I don't feel like I should be doing this. But most married guys, most of them, the story is their wives stopped having sex with them. And I'm like, have you tried talking to her about it? And either it's like, yes, we've tried talking about it for many years, done therapy, nothing's worked. Or it's like, oh, if I brought up that I wanted to just get my sexual needs met elsewhere, she would divorce me. She would freak out. They'd be like, there's no way I could even broach the subject because she would fucking lose it. And then in situations like that, I don't feel that bad. This one guy I saw, he, I guess, was in a marriage for many decades, 30 years or something insane. And he had never cheated on his wife. He was like, I was a good, faithful husband. I never f***ed anybody else, never tried, but she just stopped f***ing me. So I just went like a decade without having sex. But I never cheated because I was like, I'm dedicated to her, but she just doesn't want to have sex with me anymore, no matter what I try. And then he got cancer and they told him he was going to die. And then he had this whole like reevaluating his life and what matters. And he was like, do I want to die without ever having intimacy with a woman again? And in that moment, he was like, I do not want to die without this. And so he went and he started seeing sex workers and stuff like that. I don't feel guilty because, you know what, his wife should either f*** him or let him do it. Like, you can't just commit a man to a life like that. That's f***ing horrible.
Yeah, point taker. And hey, I've got a final question for you and then some hypotheticals, because you know, Google all the hypotheticals on Twitter. So I thought it'd be fun if you answered them of mine, because I have some for you. Not going to be the same type of hypotheticals at all, because my mom listens to my podcast, but they'll be fine. So right now you are in a polyamorous relationship. You are in a liberal part of the country and you do studies that you conduct yourself. You're very invested in research and you're also working as an escort. You came from a very, I would say, repressive, heavily religious background, and you were working in a factory after that, and this was your escape into a better life. Where do you think you would be right now if you'd been born into like a traditional nuclear family in, I don't know, Indianapolis or Dallas? You went to like a normal public school. Where do you think you'd be right now? What path would your life have taken?
Probably a lot more boring. I guess I would be like, if I had gone to college, I probably would have gotten like a degree in something dumb and then been working at a company. I don't know. I tried to do the normal life quite a lot. Like, the reason I'm in this weird life is not because I was like, that's a good idea. It's because I was desperate and I took a lot of insane options because they're the only things available to me. So I would like to say that I would be cool if I had been born to normal people, but I think I wouldn't be. I'd be like privately weird. I would be like kind of a zany weirdo in that community.
Do you wish your life was different?
If I had to give myself advice, it would be like, don't sell the Bitcoin.
You sold the Bitcoin?
I bought Bitcoin early and then I sold it early.
Yeah, you never sold the Bitcoin. Sorry.
You never sold the Bitcoin?
No, you never sell the Bitcoin. That's the whole rule, right? It's like you hold on to them.
I know. I bought it $20 and I sold it $300. Like an idiot.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. It's okay. I would just, if I regret that. I wish I had started escorting much younger.
Whoa. Just for my podcast, let's only talk about things that are above 18. So like 18, that would have been the earliest age.
Yeah, I probably should have started it around like 22, I think would have been a good age.
Yeah, that's a good number to go for. I was like, yes.
Okay. Yeah, I don't think I should have started it before 18, mostly because I didn't have myself figured out.
Okay, so 22 is when you would have started.
Yeah, because I started when I was like 28 or something.
So you wish you'd started a lot earlier.
Yeah.
Not choosing like a different career path, just started the current one earlier.
I mean, like when you say regret, like if I technically I could have done things differently, but at the time, given the knowledge I had, sex work was absolutely the best option. And like my only regrets were not getting into it harder and faster sooner.
And polyamory, it feels silly to say like, oh, do you regret it? Or like, would you have chosen something else? Because it sounds like for you, this is not just a diet. Monogamy is like a food allergy. This is your sexuality. This is who you are.
Yeah, I have absolutely no regrets. Not even when I was the first time I was listening to that one boyfriend having sex with a girl in the next room and I was dying. Even in that moment, I did not regret it or question my choice.
Yeah, well, that shows a level of dedication. All right, everybody. Thank you very much, Ayla, for educating me on polyamory. It was insanely interesting. And I feel like once I publish this episode, my mom's going to call me about it. Definitely.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for the questions. They were quite good.
Shape of fat ass, and I got strong arms to squeeze you, and I got strong legs to run over to you, fat ass, and I got strong arms to squeeze you, and I got strong legs to run over to you, I saw fat ass, and I know that you know how to treat a woman so right, oh, cause you show me, baby. To you first, I'm gonna get to you.